Ow, I just knocked my arm.
Bang. 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 Bang on.
Hi, Miffy.
Hello, Zan.
What a big week it's been.
Oh, whoa. It's been a huge, huge week. I'm back from
Yeah, I was going to say, welcome back. The last time that we were banging on, you were in the corner of an airport lounge sampling
jeggings.
The breakfast, having some pancakes and putting a little cushion over your head to fear the wrath of the fellow businessmen and other people in the lounge looking at you like you were a piece of poo because you were talking for half an hour.
Yeah, some guy was on my flight. Yeah, some guy was on my flight who was sitting near me. He just looked at me like as I got off. It was still his anger and hatred of my talking solidly for a half an hour was continuing even in Abu Dhabi. So thanks,
Let
Bank.
Let it go, mate.
Thanks, Bank fam.
You took it for the team. But you did jet from London, where you were doing some bits and pieces for the royal wedding, back to Australia. So welcome home.
Oh, thank you.
And the royal wedding, it went down on SBS, ABC, Channel 9, Channel 7. Was it on Channel 10 as well? They'd have no money. Probably
no, I think
not.
They had MasterChef repeats. And probably for the best. Because it was everywhere else. But yes, I got to broadcast the royal wedding as well. That was part of the reason why I was overseas after Eurovision for a bit longer. I was in Windsor and we walked around the castle quite a bit and got the wedding fever. And as you know, Zan, I'm a bit of a cynic when it comes to the monarchy in terms of the structure and the social inequity of such a setup whereby an unelected person becomes has some control over the direction of a company and, you know, brings out all those ideas of class and, you know, just it's a little bit irksome. But the royal wedding, I'm obsessed with the royals, the family, and how they are trying to maintain their relevance in order to keep the business afloat. And my goodness, did they do the best job I've seen in a long time at that wedding. I'm sold. Love is love. I walked away from that just going, oh my God, I believe them. This is beautiful.
There were so many elements in it that really were very different to the kind of stuffy British royal weddings
totally.
That we've seen before. I mean, the biggest moment was Reverend Michael Curry, who was one of two reverends who were hosting the proceedings, and he gave like a 14 minute sermon where he pretty much like there was a lot of love. The word love was used a lot. Love and fire.
Martin Luther King was quoted. It was a real rousing speech and quite opposite, I would imagine, to what those stiff Brits are used to within the confines of their very proper church halls. And I love that. Meghan Markle organised that and that was her choice. They'd not met him before, but he was a brilliant choice, I think, really, really ruffled a few feathers.
I didn't see it happening. I was out on Saturday night, but I kind of caught up online, as I'm sure a lot of other people did. In fact, I was waiting in line to see Anne Edmonds as Helen Badu, and there was a long line outside the venue, and there was just everyone in the line was like watching it on their phone, streaming it on their phone. It's like perfect crowd. Just everyone cared about the royal wedding. But the takeaway from it was that while I was watching the sermon later on, there was a lot of talk about how the royal family was shifting uncomfortably and maybe Camilla was laughing and there was a little smirk on William's face and Princess Catherine Kate Middleton's face as well. But there didn't seem to be that much acknowledgement about the content of what he was saying and all the different reference points that he was putting into this incredible epic sermon. And then I saw this great Twitter thread from Melbourne author Maxine Beniba Clark, where she basically came back on Twitter because she's been off Twitter over the last few months and started off with, I know I'm technically off Twitter, but a black preacher just mentioned slavery at the royal wedding and the queen is flinching.
It's true.
And then it's this amazing thread, which I'll put in the show notes because it was just incredible. It really picked up on a lot of the things that also went over my head as one of the white folks watching, including mentioning this really stood out to me when Reverend Curry said, he did not walk across the Atlantic Ocean to get here. He was covertly referencing the transatlantic slave trade. Mm. And you think about the power of inviting this reverend in a house where they basically are one. It's the seat of colonialism. Yeah. And he's basically saying this back to them with a smile on his face and sort of saying, we're back here. We're reclaiming, yeah. you know, but also this is your history and we're part of it, you know. It was such a powerful move.
Oh, it really was. And, yeah, just wonderful. And that Twitter feed is really, really entertaining and sums up a lot of thoughts I think many people were having about it being such a – it was all encompassing, this wedding, and I'm such a cynic even of marriage, and I watched and went, oh, good go, you good things, you gorgeous couple. You've actually really thought this through. You've taken your ideas of social justice and you've brought them here. You have, I don't know, they really excelled at showing us who they were, whether or not it's just still a savvy marketing ploy. I doubt it.
What I'm curious about, whether your cynicism, because I know that you can be a cynic but also love a royal wedding as a spectacle. But I remember months ago, when it was announced that they were engaged and we were talking about this modernisation, you know, the woke Windsors.
Yeah.
And you were talking about it as, just remember, they're just trying to keep up with the times and stay relevant. Do you still feel that way after watching that?
Yeah, totally. They're forever adaptable. They have always been forever adaptable. That is the history of the Windsors, and that is to make sure that they remain in a job. Essentially, it's their job to maintain their job, and they do that by staying relatable. They do that by staying up with contemporary times, and there's history within the royal family of them doing that forever.
One of the things that I thought was interesting as well, reading, there was a great Guardian editorial on this, you know, the events and how it actually rolled out with Reverend Curry. And there was so much talk, obviously, in the last, you know, really the last couple of years since Meghan and Harry have been dating, about, you know, she's always the biracial American, you know, it's constantly this discussion of her race in the conversation. But then just talking about what an incredible moment it was, because when it came out to the royal wedding, I think everyone just thought, oh, it's just going to be a stuffy, very white British affair. But people were sort of, they weren't expecting to have what this writer says is such blackness from a black bride.
Yeah.
And that in itself I thought was really interesting too. It's like, you know, you're constantly talking about her biracial background, but then when she flips it and basically proudly displays that on one of the most watched events of the year, if not the decade, you're kind of like, oh, what? And everyone's kind of smirking and making fun of it, almost like that awkward, if you smile and laugh, you're sort of dismissing it instead of actually harnessing what the power of it is and respecting the choices that they've made.
Yep.
There'll be think pieces written about this, and there already have been.
Can I just say, though, it's really interesting looking at the Queen throughout all of this. Now, the only reason she is the Queen is because her father became the King, because the person who was supposed to be King abdicated because he fell in love with an American divorcee.
Yes.
And now we had Harry marrying an American divorcee, and they're to be applauded for what they did on that day. They turned it all upside down, and I was more than pleasantly surprised. It was pretty amazing, actually.
Did you hear that Beyoncé bought a church?
No, tell me.
You know there was that movie We Bought a Zoo?
Yeah.
Now there's a movie called We Bought a Church, but Beyoncé's starring in it and it's real life.
Oh, is this going to be good?
Well, this is just my Beyoncé update. All I know is she bought a church. It's in New Orleans where her mother is from and also her sister Solange lives.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful little church. Looks quite small.
Yeah.
Hasn't been used in a little while. All of the parishioners have died, apparently, so it's been lying dormant.
Aww.
Or the people who ran it. Anyway, it's not a church in use. But she's bought it. It's more than 100 years old. The selling price was listed at more than $850,000 American dollars. Not sure what price Beyonce bought it through, domain.com.au, but she owns the church, and I'm so excited about what this could mean, because it's like, does she want to live there? Is she going to start a church at Beyonce?
Oh my gosh.
How do I join? Please take my money.
Are we going on a holiday to visit that destination the second it's open? Yes, we are.
Oh my God, we should totally do a pilgrimage and go to Dollywood, Graceland, and Beyonce's church.
Oh my God, we can get on the Bang Bus.
Yes!
Get on the Bang bus. We are going. It'll be like we can be your tour guides, bringing absolutely no information your way, just our presence, because that's what they are, aren't they, those trips? Surely.
I love those celebrity guided tours, and I am calling us the celebrities now, so I'm self-naming as celebrities. Oh, no. But I've seen that like David and Margaret have started doing it, where they go on film cruises.
Really?
What a bloody racket. Oh, like, can we please do that?
Yes, let's do it.
Bang bus, ahoy. It'll be like Kentucky, but we'll be wearing flap chaps and we'll be drinking Mai Tais. Bang bus, ahoy. Anyway, I just wanted to give you an update on Beyonce. She bought a church.
Thanks, Beyonce. Can't wait for our future holiday. My favourite theme music to one of the early groundbreaking television series, Arrested Development. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was one of those that I got on DVD originally, I think, if you remember those.
Blu-ray?
Yeah, Blu-ray. Probably had a Blu-ray copy with a special bonus DVD commentary. But I loved Arrested Development. Still do. I think it's brilliant in terms of characterisation and writing and just outright hilarious. It's a wonderful television series to watch. It's coming back for another series, and there was an interview that you can read online called Arrested Development. We sat down with the Arrested Development cast, full stop. It got raw, and this article is getting attention for all the wrong reasons, or perhaps the right reasons. And the reasons are that it discusses Jeffrey Tambor, who plays the character of George Bluth Sr., who was recently fired from his role on Transparent after two cast members accused him of sexual harassment. And they brought that up and discussed his aggression on set. And if you're reading the interview, it's almost like they don't even discuss it, but it's like watching what happens in real life when an abuser, a male abuser is there. It's like the two men in the room that were speaking about it with him basically apologized.
No, tripping
for his behavior.
The three. It's like David Cross, and
who
Jason
plays Tobias
Bateman.
Funk and Jason Bateman.
Funke, isn't it?
Funke.
Jason Bateman, who plays Michael, and Tony Hale, who plays Buster. But they're all tripping over themselves to justify
his behavior.
And like almost like you can kind of, any woman who reads this will be like, oh, you can hear them jumping in and almost cutting off anybody else's dialogue. Meanwhile, Jessica Walter, who's the actor who plays Lucille, his wife in the show, is crying.
Yeah.
And Alia Shawkat, who plays Maybe, incredible actor, she is kind of saying, you know what, it's not acceptable. This is not normal, while the other guys are going, oh, it just happens. It's part of creativity. It's so, like, it's so transparent. Sorry, pardon the pun.
Boom tish.
I didn't mean that. But it's so clear that to any woman who's been in that situation where, there's, you know, the people of the same gender usually, I'm sorry, not all men, I know, but some, when it happens, we've seen it before from a female perspective where men come in and just like, oh, no, it's not, you know, it's this and it's fine. It's just like,
oh,
he's a
good bloke.
Why don't you listen to, and in this context, there's actually a talked about incident where Jessica Walter, Lucille, has basically been at the end of his wrath, where he's basically verbally abused her, and she's talking about that and talking about how hard that was, and she's trying to heal from it. And they're still saying, oh, no, but that's actually a normal part of the creative process. So they haven't even experienced this, but they're explaining away how it's not a problem. It's so uncomfortable.
Oh, absolutely. It's downplaying a behaviour and supporting it, but also confusing creativity with just being an asshole. That's as simple as it is. It's like no one gets to behave like that. Bateman comes in with exactly, again, there's context. What we do for a living is not normal, and therefore the process is not normal sometimes. And to expect it to be normal is not to understand what happens on set, not to excuse it, but to be surprised by people having a wobbly route to their goal, their process. It's very rarely predictable. That's just excusing really, really bad and inappropriate behaviour and calling it being creative.
That happens a lot, doesn't it, as well, when we kind of in structures. And I think we talked about it in a different realm when after Avicii died, and these creative worlds where there's just not the same sort of structure as there are in a quote-unquote normal workplace. Mm. but also when it comes to personalities and people who are performing and they need to, you know, maybe get in the zone for better or worse, why is it that we still have these expectations, but we still give people a green light to, you know, blow off steam in whichever way they want or get into the zone in whichever way they want if it's abusive to other people? That seems like such a weird thing to say in 2018 and such a flawed argument. Like, it's about respecting those around you who are also performers, who are also getting in the zone, but they don't need to do that.
Yeah.
It just seems like a real cop-out. I don't know. It was a really strange thing to that he kept on really ramming it home in this interview, didn't he? It's really strange.
Really, give it a read. It's called We Sat Down with the Arrested Development Cast, It Got Raw. And it's a real statement of our times and where we're at and the disconnect, I think, between some older established actors and what's really going on now and what needs to happen and what needs to change.
Oh, again, the art and the artist, Miffy. We could talk about it for years and years. And we probably will.
Yeah, next Bang On next week. Oh, I love that song. It's the opening track that is used for the theme for Peep Show, which is a wonderful British sitcom starring David Mitchell and Robert Webb. If you haven't seen it, it's on all your streaming services. It's one of the funniest series I think I've ever seen. I put it up there with Toast of London, if you haven't
Oh, you haven't talked about Toast of London for ages.
I know. I still go back
and
watch Toast.
That's early days, Bang On.
I still go back and watch Toast, and I love him. But Peep Show's up there as well. It's like comfort viewing. I can watch it again and again and see more, and I just think they're hilarious. But this week I was very lucky to go along and see Robert Webb in conversation. He's out here. He's been out here for various writers' festivals and all of that business. He's written a book which is called How Not to Be a Boy, and it's a wonderful discussion about masculinity, how he got to be where he is and what he had to change in order to function in this world and to understand what led him to become an angry young man and a very confused young man. And it was a wonderful conversation. And yeah, I'm just recommending a Peep Show and Robert Webb's book, but also if you get a chance to hear him speak too, he's just equally as funny as you think he would be. Sometimes the actors in television series that they don't write aren't necessarily as engaging in real life because they don't, you know, they're not who you see on screen. They're acting, but he genuinely is delightful and very thoughtful and has some really interesting views on masculinity and gender. And I found his conversation really, really enlightening. It was with Clem Ford, who's a writer and a really interesting woman in her own right. So, yeah, it was just coming highly recommended, but also get across Peep Show if you need a good laugh and some great comfort viewing. Just do yourself a favour, as Molly Meldrum would say.
All right. What am I banging on about?
No,
you
I was I was getting a pause on you. I just couldn't get over you. Zan, what are you banging on about?
Miffy, I'm banging on about Westworld season 2, and it's partially a bang on to just really implore and request that the Bang Fam explain to me what the is going on with this, because I'm so confused.
What is going on? Where are we at? Are they still caught in their netherworld of aliens and weird gear?
Yeah, well, I mean, without giving any spoiler alerts, if you haven't seen Westworld, it's a HBO series. It's a show very much about humanity, even though it's about robots. It's sort of like, if you're going to do this to someone who looks just like a human, what does that say about you as a human? But the season 1 ended, I'm not going to say how it ended. It ended in a way where there was a turning point between the humans and the robots. And season 2 is very much about games, and it's flipping between time and worlds. There's new worlds that have been introduced and characters that you don't know whether they're real or not and who the characters are. It's so confusing. But it's one of the things that I guess, you know, again, I don't want to give too many spoilers because I know some people want to watch it. But I'll say this. It's one of the few shows that I've watched in the last few years where you just can't double screen, because if you turn away your head for a second and you don't know what the hell is going on. And even then I'm reading all of these recaps just trying to get an insight into what it all means, What are the characters' motivations? I'm trying as much. It's like a maze I'm trying to solve as much as I am being entertained by it. It is incredibly violent. There are really problematic things about the characterization of women, but I'm still trying to figure out if that's like an allegory for something. It's just, it's kind of like I'm trying to solve this high school project and maze while watching it. But yeah, it's fascinating. And I'm, you know, I'm watching every episode and thoroughly confused. So if any Bang fam have got any good recaps they want to shoot my way, please do.
Oh, so you're into it, but you don't understand it. Does that mean it's good or it's a bit not so good?
I think it's really good. I think that in terms of structure and the way that it's delivered, the performances, the way that it looks is incredible, but just the, you know, it's kind of like Inception, you know, I guess that's the best analogy I can give in terms of you're just trying to figure out what is going on, but in a really clever way. It's literally a maze, and the show, the structure of the show and the story that's going on in season two is quite literally a maze. We're not trying to get out of the park. We're going into the center of the core of what it all means. So I'm going to have an epiphany in a few weeks and I'll let you know how it goes.
Good. I've just got some advice on that. Stick to the original 70s film and you'll be fine.
Last time.
I know.
I still got to watch that. I will watch that. Maybe I'll watch that over the weekend.
It's pretty basic, but it's great.
It was a simpler time.
It was.
I look forward to chatting with you next week.
Yeah, you too, Zan.
Bye, Miffy.
Bye.
Bang on.